I'm joined online by Mark Kamine. So he's primarily here to promote his book, but also I'm hoping to give us a bit of juicy gossip about some of his time in television. Hi, Mark. How's it going?
Very good. Glad to be here.
You're in Vietnam right now. Is that correct?
In Thailand.
Oh, sorry. Apologies. How's that going? Not a bad place to be.
It's pretty great. I mean, it's not a total secret that I'm on the White Lotus. And so we're here for season 3, which has been announced. So I can actually talk about it. And it's amazing. It's an amazing job that we get to go to these, you know, it's a TV show set in luxury resorts. So in my career, that's a rarity.
So you get to spend time in those luxury resorts. And how do you have time for all this? Because we're primarily talking to promote your book, but you're working on an extremely successful TV show, traveling the world, getting your book out there. How are you juggling it?
Well, I mean, getting the book out, I haven't gotten to do this too much, which is kind of unfortunate. But on the other hand, I can't complain, you know, getting to go to these great hotels on White Lotus. And, you know, the good thing for me is that I'm involved in the production. I'm involved in the scheduling, budgeting, and the shooting of the show. And then in post-production, which for this show and many shows like it, you know, it could be 6 months when Mike White, the creator of this one, goes into the editing room, and I'm involved in approvals and budgeting things, but I get some writing time. So,
okay, cool.
So I use it.
It's like heavy load on, and then you get to turn your attentions elsewhere for a short amount of time.
Yes, exactly.
Great. So your book, if you could just tell us what it's called and give the listeners a bit of a synopsis of what it's about.
It's called On Locations. And it's about a person that I was, some 30 and the years following that, 30 years ago and until maybe 20 or so years ago when I was starting my career and sort of balancing a film production job with normal life and starting a family and raising a family and having some literary aspirations that got a little waylaid in the meantime. And I happened to, you know, in a kind of roving film production career, which is very normal, chance upon a show, The Sopranos, which became like this phenomenon in a very unexpected way at the beginning. And so, you know, I've spent a lot of my free time, spare time, writing mostly book reviews for various publications and some fiction. And I thought, well, this seems like a good combination of a show that's renowned and, you know, sort of historic as people tell me, and my own, interest in writing and, you know, capturing, something about human life that's not necessarily part of the film business, you know, just normal existence, which I was leading while I was doing that.
It's human life, and it sounds like a very special time in your life as well. Actually, just before this, I played the song by Miley Cyrus, Used to Be Young, and she says in it, I used to be fun. And I can certainly relate to that as I've got older. Yes. Is it a bit of that nostalgia to it? You're looking back on this sort of crazy time in your life where you didn't know how big things were going to get and you're just been a bit young and reckless.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was, you know, I went into it so unaware of the film business. I was an English major and I sort of wandered around and did odd jobs through my 20s. And I lived in New York City in a free apartment because I was the superintendent of the building. And at a certain point, and it occurred to me, like, I better get my stuff together and maybe get a career. And it was the boom of the independent film movement in the U.S. Sundance Film Festival was just starting. And I decided to, you know, try that. So yeah, there's a real like nostalgia and fondness for that kind of undefined period of life, I think, you know, for me. And then what coincided was meeting my future wife and getting into film school, and then, you know, soon after getting a few jobs that, you know, out of nowhere put me in like these positions that I never would have, first of all, never would have conceived that it was a job that you could do, you know, drive a van with Robert Redford sitting next to you on a movie that he was going to direct. Like, it just was like, I was like working for free, and the producer I was working for said, one of these jobs is going to happen and I'm going to give you a position in Locations. And so, you know, On Locations is kind of the department itself and what it means to be in the middle of that kind of world.
In that world. And it seems like it sort of suddenly blew up around you. When you first started working on The Sopranos, did you know that this was going to be big?
No idea. I mean, I got the job through the producer, Eileen Landris, who, you know, ran the show, and I had worked with her and then for her a little bit beforehand. And, you know, HBO had one or two shows that were well known before Sopranos, Gary Shandling, and I think Sex and the City came out right before it, but was really known for reruns of movies and sports, live sports. And so, and Eileen told me that the show had tested well with professors and housewives. So that didn't seem super promising as a as a long-term gig, but, you know, I was taking jobs as they came along, and then it blew up after the first season when it aired. It was just everywhere, and that was an amazing ride to go on, you know, even from someone very much in the middle of the pack and not at the forefront of, you know, the reason for its great success.
And how did the vibe change? You know, how did everything feel when it did suddenly get big? Did things change, or were you able to keep everything grounded and just keep your eye on the job and everybody else as well? You know, not just for you.
Yeah, for me, it was easy. I was doing a job that, you know, at that point I had been doing it for, I don't know, 6 years or so. And so I'd been in the middle of, you know, these kinds of situations where there were, you know, well-known actors or directors around. And I was just doing a function that could have been the same on any job. But, you know, it was interesting for sure to witness how things changed with people involved in the show and the people who really got famous all of a sudden. You know, I tell a story in the book about, you know, when we first went out to scout for locations for the show and prep the show, you know, a lot of times you'll, like with my first job, which I mentioned, Robert Redford was a movie, and you use his name and everyone knows and it opens doors. And with The Sopranos, no one knew who these people were really, unless you were pretty far into film and TV world. And except maybe Lorraine Bracco had been the wife in Goodfellas, and some people would recognize her, or we would use her name. You know, you're trying to get access to locations for people to allow you to film. So, and 1 year later, it was like people were like pulling us up and sending us pictures of their homes and businesses and saying, please come film there. And that was, you know, on a personal level, it was a big change. And then obviously to have these fans coming to the set and trying to get glimpses and looks at, you know, James Gandolfini and the other actors who were all of a sudden renowned, you know, was interesting to witness.
And how would you say that things changed for James Gandolfini, seeing him go to that sort of superstardom almost, really, in such a short amount of time? Do you feel that it changed things for him? Did you see a change?
I didn't really. I mean, he was, you know, a reserved and not, you know, like people call him shy, and I would agree with that. I mean, I think it was somewhat burdensome for him, the fame, like it is for a lot of people who become suddenly famous. And I don't know, because I didn't know him beforehand and I didn't know him super well during that time, how it changed him. But certainly everyone felt, I think, his great generosity once he had access to a lot of stuff that he wanted to include everyone in. And that was pretty amazing to see, because it's pretty rare in that world to have it so evident. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, famous people who obviously have charitable causes and you hear about things they contribute to, but just on the ground level with him, it was like right on the set, you know, and gifts that he would give out, and how he helped people. And then, you know, I don't know if it changed, you know, I mean, he definitely, maybe it became too much sometimes for him, and, you know.
Fair enough.
Saw that.
Yeah. And to be just purely shamelessly sycophantic here, are you going to name drop some of the big stars that you got the opportunity to meet personally?
In my whole career?
We're looking at The Sopranos here.
Sure. happy to name drop. I mean, because Sopranos became so prestigious to be connected to, like, we did have, like, an episode that in particular that I talk about, and, you know, that was called Luxury Lounge, that was set in a kind of Hollywood world that Christopher Moltisanti, played by Michael Imperioli, was trying to take advantage of. Lauren Bacall was in the show, and Ben Kingsley in the same episode as, like, guest appearances playing themselves. And, you know, I mean, I got into movies because I was a movie buff, not because I had to be in movies. So to run across people like that, and especially Lauren Bacall, who had such a deep history with, like, studio Hollywood. I mean, I talk also in the book about going kind of out of my way to, like, talk to her just about people she knew. And in particular, because of my literary interest, I knew she had met Hemingway, and I asked her about it. So, like, that was, to me, that was like, wow, this is amazing.
That's super cool. And are you able to tantalize us with a bit of gossip, maybe some drunken swimming I might have heard something about?
Yeah, I mean, we did have a night, you know, like when we shot an episode in Florida that, you know, sometimes some of the actors and certainly a bunch of the crew, and me included, would find a bar somewhere to go to. And, you know, there is a story I tell, you know, one of the few times that I went along with going out with the cast. And this was when we finished the work in Miami, and we went out to dinner, and then we get back to the hotel, and someone texted me to come down to the pool, and the crew and a couple of the cast members and James Gandolfini were there passing the bottle around, and I partook in that. And then the hotel told us to stop. It was late and we were making too much noise, and the sort of movement went to, like, well, let's go down to the beach. We just got some beer. And then, I don't know whose idea it was, but, someone wanted to take a dip in the ocean in the middle of the night. And that kind of scared me. I was a production person, supposedly responsible and probably a little scared of the ocean myself anyway. And in the middle of the night, way scared of it. And I actually, told James Gandolfini that I didn't think it was a good idea. And, you know, you can read the book and see what happens if you want.
Oh, leaving us on a cliffhanger there. I like it.
Well, why not?
You know how to hold an audience. I can see that. It's definitely in your talents. So when everything ended with Sopranos, how did that feel for you, and what was next for you, and did you feel, just tell us about how you felt and what you had to do next.
I mean, there was, it was a long stretch, and, you know, seven seasons. They called the last two seasons 6A and 6B, but essentially seven seasons of work, and over really 9 years. And so it was a long stretch. There was definitely some sadness about it ending. For me, and this is where the career part kicks in the book, I was in a position as a location person and slightly above that rank of kind of frustration and kind of glad to be moving on in some ways. And I actually started, you know, I became like a production manager producer after that, and was really looking for other opportunities to not do locations, you know, in this book called On Location. So, and so it was, you know, very mixed feelings. I think for everyone, you get kind of tired of people after 7 years. I mean, I know people work jobs for 30 years. But when you're working 14 or 16 hours a day and weird hours and stopping and starting, you know, you know how families are. It's not always smooth sailing. And so and especially in a job like a film job, or I'm sure there's other jobs where you're doing, you know, kind of piecework. You're used to moving on, and you feel a little bit like, I need a break from these people. And mm-hmm. I think we all felt some of that, but also a lot of sadness. And I spent, and maybe for some people more than others, really sad to see it end. Not me, though.
Well, the future has been bright for you since then, hasn't it? So it seems like everything's going well your end. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about apart from the book? I'll give another shout out to that towards the end of this. But what's going on with White Lotus, as much as you're allowed to tell us, or what to look out for?
I mean, White Lotus is, you know, we're starting our third season. It should be airing in about 8 months or so. You know, we'll shoot for another 5 or 6 months, and Mike White will edit with the editors and for another 5 months after that. And we have a great cast, and, you know, almost all of them are here now. We've just finished our third week of filming. You know, some great names: Jason Isaacs, Parker Posey, Carrie Coon from Gilded Age, another HBO show, and Michelle Monaghan, Leslie Bibb, who I worked with years ago on a film called Law Abiding Citizen that I reminded her of. And we were both, and I don't know if you know that film, but Jamie Foxx and Gerard Butler. And we were both like, you get, as a Directors Guild member, I get some residual checks. Sometimes they're $1 or one penny, and sometimes they're a little more. And she's, of course, a Screen Actors Guild member. And we were both like, can you believe that movie keeps going? Like, people just keep seeing that movie. I mean, anyway, so White Lotus, Thailand, as Mike White said, it's supersized this year. We're shooting a lot longer, and it's pretty wild season. So
exciting stuff to come, and best of luck with it. Mark, thank you so much for talking to us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. Mark Hamine's book is called On Locations, and you can find it on the Talk Radio Europe bookshop, or presumably on all the best places online where you can get your books. Mark, if you'd like people to follow what you're up to, where's the best place to go hunting for you?
I would say Amazon.com for the book, and just keep tracking White Lotus, because that's where I'll be hopefully for the next 4 or 5 years, because the show's got a lot to say for sure.
Great. Thank you so much. Keep seeing. Bye.
Okay, Anna, thank you.